I'd like to start with a few reflections about today's saint, St. Peter Claver. He's a very inspiring example of the Christian life, of Christian charity. He was a Spanish Jesuit born in the late 16th century, at a time when, with the discovery of the New World and with the upheavals in the church at the Protestant Reformation, there was a renewed wave of missionary interest, right? Let's go to the New World and evangelize these peoples that we didn't know existed. Of course, it was combined with, let's conquer these new countries and take over and get their gold. So mixture of motives, but still it was a time when a lot of people were moved to go to the New World. Well, St. Peter Claver was one of them, or he felt called to be a missionary. He volunteered and he was sent to Colombia, and he never went back. I mean, that's the way it was then. I'm a missionary and I come back to the United States every year. And so it doesn't, I don't think we can make comparisons, but he dedicated himself very, very explicitly and almost exclusively to the black slaves who had been kidnapped or sold in Africa and brought to Colombia, to the center of the slave trade in South America there, Cartagena. So it was a extraordinary ministry because at that time, slavery, even though it had been condemned by the church, it was a very lucrative business and very popular. So it was like the engine of wealth for those who were not slaves themselves, for the owners. And there's a terrible legacy to this day of racism that is connected to that black slavery. We need someone like St. Peter Claver to remind us of the evil of slavery, because there's a new slavery now, human trafficking. Human trafficking is slavery. It's treating people like products or instruments for our gain, abuse. Also racism, which has reared its head again in this country, and we have to be reminded. That's insanity, racism. To see someone who's other as lower, it doesn't make any sense. And St. Peter saw himself as the slave of the slaves. He saw them, even before they were baptized, before he could say, these are my brothers and sisters, he saw their human dignity, which was being trampled, and he said, someone needs to take care of these people, and I'm the one sent to do it. So he had people with him, but he was moved by genuine, first of all, a genuine respect for human dignity, and then genuine Christian charity, because that's what we're called to do, love our neighbor, especially neighbors in need. Well, that's Peter Claver, and an example, I think, someone whose example is still relevant today. As I was reflecting on this, I remembered an incident from my college days, which really, really hurts still that I did this. I made a stupid remark. I had a friend, I don't know if he was in my year or a year ahead of me, but anyway, he was from the British Virgin Islands. A wonderful guy. I really liked the guy. He was black. I don't know what the race of British Virgin Islands is, but I thought of him as black, and that didn't mean anything to me. Anyway, I'm what, 18 years old, 19, I don't know. And in the banter of, you know, hanging around with friends, I said something stupid, which if he hadn't told me about it afterwards, I would never have thought of it again. Stupid, negative humor, something I learned negative humor from my culture, from my family, from my upbringing. When I was in high school, that was the way to relate to people. And if you could make a clever remark, it didn't matter if it would hurt anybody, because if it was funny, then it was legit. Anything was legitimate. So that was the nature of the stupid thing I said. And as I say, it was not intended to insult him, or even, it wasn't even about him. It was about me, you know, making myself look funny. So later that day, or that night, he came to me privately and he said, "You tried to humiliate me." And I was mortified. It was like hit with a bolt of lightning. I said, "Oh man, I never intended that, but I did do it." I mean, and he felt it. So the opening of my eyes to how he experienced that stupid remark or joke was just an earthquake for me. And actually, maybe it came to my mind because of Sunday's gospel. Remember Sunday's gospel? If someone sins against you, go to him privately and tell him. That's exactly what my friend, and he acted like a friend to me by correcting me, and I still have the lesson. Now, I still have the pattern of making negative jokes, and it's a bad habit, and I'm sorry if I've offended people doing that. But anyway, that's a great lesson to learn, and I'm really grateful that he did that for me. But our relationship was affected ever since. First of all, I felt humiliated, and maybe he felt I wasn't a safe person to be around. So that's the damage that racism causes. Anyway, that's the story that came to my mind, a great life lesson. And St. Peter Claver was a living lesson like this. Like, you people who want to buy and sell these people, you people who think that these black men and women who have been brought here, you think they're just property for sale? That's not the truth. And my life should expose before your eyes the error here. You know, the Spanish missionary, the Spanish, not just missionaries, but the Spanish culture, they look down on the local people. We experienced this in the Philippines. The Spanish had a high view of themselves and of their own culture, which was a great culture, the Golden Age. But then they looked down on the local people. But then the blacks were even lower than the Native Americans, the Indians. So the blacks were so low that they weren't even human. So that is a very, very grave error. And thanks be to God, we have saints to remind us of that. Okay, well, before I go to the readings, I want to tell another story because it came to my mind in light of the readings. It comes from our meeting with Bishop Bonici last Wednesday, 1 week ago today. Tim and I, is Tim here? Okay, well, Tim and I went to present the Anawim community to Bishop Bonici up in Rochester, and he greeted us he welcomed us very graciously. He's a wonderful person, and he's very grateful to have Anawim in his diocese. So that was encouraging. But in the course of our conversation, he mentioned that some journalists had been interviewing him because he was a witness of the 9/11 disaster. He was in Manhattan as a priest and he ministered to people there, and he had, you know, personal experience of being there in 9/11. And there's so much news about the 25th anniversary of 9/11 coming up. It seems to come up all the time in the social media because today's the 9th. Friday, was it Friday? Friday is the 25th anniversary of that terrible disaster. I remember it. All of you remember it if you were alive. Maybe you don't. But anyone who was alive and old enough in 2001 knows exactly where they were. I was in this house. I was a new priest, ordained a couple of months, and I was here spending time celebrating the gift of the priesthood. And I was right here. And of course, the news was just shocking. And then I had a mass either that afternoon or that evening. I don't remember what it was, but we dedicated the mass to the victims of the attacks. Anyway, Bishop Bonici was reminded, because a journalist was interviewing him, of his own experience, and he shared it with us, how just overwhelming it was. And then he was one of the priests sent to they set up a temporary morgue in the World Trade Center, part of it that wasn't destroyed, to collect the victims. And the first week or something, there were no victims, just body parts. I mean, and dust. And his own, he had an apartment not far from the World Trade Center. He was working when the disasters happened. He was a couple miles uptown. I don't remember where, in the chancery or something, working in some church setting. But his own living quarters were further. He had left the window open. And he said when he got back to his apartment, it was full of dust, meaning not only the dust, but he said even the remains of the victims. And so anyway, very moving what he shared. But he also shared like the effect on the city. He's from the city. And he said the effect on the population and the culture for weeks, people were like attentive to one another and greeted each other and were polite and friendly. And you know, New York City culture is really kind of brusque, and everybody's in a hurry, and nobody looks at anyone else. And he said there was just a transformation in the culture. And of course, the churches were filled with people. Everybody was praying. Everybody's calling out to God. Everybody was reminded of the transitory nature of things, because something that we think is so big and strong could be reduced to rubble in a minute. So He said that passed, of course, that gradually faded away, that awareness, that new perspective. But anyway, that's what came to my mind, that the story from Bishop Onichi, because of the revolution that took place, not only in society and the changes that it brought to the culture, but the new perspective that it brought. And the reason that comes to mind is because Christian faith is a kind of revolution. Christian faith brings us a new perspective. It's the overturning. It overturns our usual values, our worldly values, and it exposes our hidden errors. Sometimes in shocking ways, sudden insult. Well, insight. Like I say, my friend who corrected me back in my college days, it was like a revolution. I said, am I that stupid? Am I that harmful to people? I don't even know it. And like, who am I? That's a good revolution to go through. What are my values really? Myself or others? God or myself? That kind of thing. So this is what comes up in today's gospel. Actually, both of today's readings. Today's gospel is the passage from Luke, the four Beatitudes and the four woes, which are shockingly opposite of how we think, directly opposite of how we naturally think. Blessed are you who are poor, hungry, weeping, hated. We say, well, no one wants to be poor. No one wants to be hungry. No one wants to be weeping. We want to be happy. We want to be filled. We want to be popular. We want to be rich. That's just the way we are. So for Jesus to say, blessed are you when you're in the opposite condition, it's a revolution. A revolution. By the way, this passage is very important for the Anuim, because blessed are you who are poor is a reference to the Anuim. Who are the Anuim? Anuim means the poor. Now, in Matthew's gospel, it says poor in spirit. Here, Luke's gospel says poor. We take it, the meaning to be the same. To be poor in the eyes of God and to recognize our poverty is to be Anuim. And he says, blessed are you who are poor, for the kingdom of God is yours. Is it really good to be poor, hungry, weeping, hated? Jesus says, yes, yes, blessed are you. Blessed are you. Because of the great spiritual fruit that comes from these dispositions. The greatness of having this emptiness is just extraordinary. It leaves us, or it opens us to the grace of God. It makes us receptive to the grace of God. And that is so important, because that's what we need for our fulfillment and our happiness, is God. We need His help, His grace, His light. So that's why it's great to be poor, to be hungry, and this especially spiritual dispositions. And the opposite can also happen, and this is why there's four woes here. Because, and this is a sad reality, we can be filled with ourselves. We can be rich, rich in money, although most people aren't rich in money, and it seems like fewer people, only a few are really rich. But anyway, we can be rich with money, we can be rich with our self-will, with our self-glorification, with our control, just filled with ourselves. That's how we can easily be. And when we're like that, what space is there for God? What space is there for God? Father Francis used to love the term the interior space. The interior space. Well, is there any space for God in my heart? Or am I rich? Am I filled? Am I laughing? Do I want to be popular? I think back of my college, that college incident. Thoughtless, yes, not malicious, but still, I was just so full of myself. Making a joke at someone else's expense so that I would be popular, so that I would be, that people would be laughing. Exactly the thing that Jesus says, well, woe to you. That's the revolution here. We need this kind of revolution of our thinking, because we so naturally think the wrong way. And we need our eyes opened to what's really important. It's not that important to have and to be popular and to experience worldly joys. It's just not that important. In fact, it's almost worse. So thinking of this, that 9/11 tragedy, the attacks, it was a terrible event. It was evil and a terrible tragedy, yes. So maybe it's not a good comparison. Because conversion is a great event. The change, the revolution I'm talking about is a really positive one, not a terrorist event. But symbolically, if I can say this without being disrespectful of the victims and of the event, symbolically, we do need a kind of destruction. We do need our towers to be flattened. You know, towers of pride, towers of self-centeredness. That has to be torn down, and that we do need, and we'll benefit from it. We do need to be reminded that earthly things are passing away. Everything earthly, even things that we think are really good or really valuable, in an instant, can be taken. If not by a calamity, at least certainly by our own death. Because when we die, what value is all this stuff? So that's St. Paul's point here. Talk about revolutions. As St. Paul is talking about how time is running out. Time is running out. So, and all our decisions have to be made with that awareness if we're going to be Christians, if we're going to be mature. Now, he starts out with the business of marriage and virgins and all that. I'm not going to try to explain that. But the point he makes, though, is don't think that marriage is going to make you live happily ever after. Well, all married people are chuckling here. Obviously, but you know, every young couple looking forward to marriage thinks, oh, this is going to be my happiness. I mean, it's a natural attraction, of course, but it isn't that. And St. Paul is saying, okay, get a right perspective of this. Yeah, marriage is a good thing, a very good thing. I know now young people, they don't get married at all because they don't think it will be good. Well, it is good, but it's not the ultimate good. It's not the ultimate happiness. It's not going to satisfy. Marriage, actually, part of the reason why it's good is because of the difficulty associated with it. Now, he says, people who marry will experience affliction in their earthly life, and I would like to spare you that. Now, in other places, Paul talks about how the value of suffering. So here he's saying, I want to spare you from some suffering. And marriage is a real school of sacrificial love. It is, and that's how. In fact, that's one of the best schools of sacrificial love. That's how we learn to love. If we love people and we can't get along with them, or we love people and they make demands on us, well, how else are we going to learn to love? People talk about whether it's harder to be single or married. Sometimes people, I've said this before, people look at the priest and say, "Oh, you've made so many sacrifices in your life. You don't have a wife and a family." And sure, but sacrifice is part of life, and I don't think it's any harder than married people. I've talked to lots of married people, it's hard. So, and Paul seems to think it's easier to be single. I don't know. The point though is that the ultimate values are not found here, and Paul is saying time is running out. Time for this world and time for our own lives is running out. So we won't find lasting joy, even in marriage, as good as it is. We won't find lasting joy in earthly wealth, in money, in business. That's what he says. If you have a business, well, act as if you don't have one. Or if you have money, act as if you don't have money. If you're weeping, as you're not weeping. He's not saying we shouldn't have money or we shouldn't be weeping or we shouldn't have wives. He's saying, the world in its present form is passing away. So in light of that, make all your decisions. So yes, you have to support your families. You have to, you know, make decisions that are good for your loved ones. And he doesn't mean you just sit down and wait for the end of the world. But he does say the world in its present form is passing away. What is not passing away is the love of God. The love of God, the true basis for our happiness, for our beatitude, the love of God. If we don't have it, if we don't know it, if we're not dedicated to it, woe to us. But if we do have it, blessed are you. So to have the gift of faith and to live by faith, to be able to be detached from what, even good things, in order to be more deeply attached to God, blessed are you. Blessed are you. And that's the point, I think, of these readings, that this kind of revolution is a very good revolution for us. And it leads to our beatitude eternally. So blessed are you if you know and follow the love of God.